Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
Happy Monday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 4-hour supersonic soul train line. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border, Anchorage to Atlanta, Vegas to Valdosta, Kalamazoo and Waterloo, we are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Thanks so much for beginning your week with us, everybody. As always, we're here 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific, on all of these wonderful CBS Sports Radio stations on Sirius XM Channel 206, and streaming. Use the CBS Sports app, the radio.com app, or Apple Music. Also, you can watch us at watchda.com. This morning here on the show, we're debuting a brand new segment. There is a lot of animosity. There's a lot of fury and frustration, fear and panic in the world right now. And so I decided, you know what? On this show, I wanted to highlight something really good. I wanted to highlight people that I really liked, people that I respected, that I thought had great voices, that I thought had great senses of humor, people that I just really liked in sports media. And so starting today, throughout the week, every day, we'll highlight another person from this list. It is my favorite people in sports. And so every day this week, we'll have another one of the lucky few that arrive and are present on the DA show list of favorite people in sports. Today we begin with Jim Murray, who's going to join us coming up here in hour number 4. Jim is a central part of my old sports radio station in Boston, 98.5 The Sports Hub. He's got an amazing sense of humor. He's also somebody that I call the Oracle of Low Culture. He is a guy that on social media, specifically Twitter, will answer any and every question about the specific type of sandwich you need to get at this bar at 1 a.m. He will tell you exactly the perfect slice of pizza or what he thinks about a specific movie or what he thinks about a specific actor or TV show, have them ranked. I mean, this is a man that I don't know how he does it, has just lists upon lists upon lists in his brain stacked of what's good and what sucks and in descending order. He's an amazing guy to follow. He's an amazing guy to listen to on the radio. I love what he says and what he does and his personality. So we'll start there. It's going to be a lot of fun this week. Have so many people that I really love in sports and sports media joining us throughout the week here on the show. So we'll begin with Big Jim Murray from 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston coming up here in hour number 4. Also this morning on the show, we'll get to Major League Baseball's proposal with this. The PA has come back, and now we have the details of the PA saying, how about 114-game proposal instead of the 82-game proposal? Apparently, that's now in front of the owners, so we'll discuss. Also, two sports documentaries last night. One on the Portland Trail Blazers of the early 90s that went to two NBA Finals, and one on Lance Armstrong, which wrapped up last night with the final 2 hours, the second half of it on ESPN. So we'll review both of those and see if there was anything in there that we did not know or that we needed to know that we did not have previously from the two sports documentaries. All of that coming up this morning on the show, plus This Date Mothership History, Soundcheck, and Stunned to a News. But let's start with the weekend that was, obviously filled with demonstrations and protests. Unfortunately, some places rioting and looting as well. But I think that the message, if you could peer through the violence, which did not happen everywhere, was that there is a message that is very powerful, that is very important, that is very difficult to challenge right now. I'd find it very difficult for anybody to challenge out there the idea that police brutality or senseless killings by those in authority would be defended in any single way. Of course, I think we all agree that law enforcement have a remarkably difficult and stressful job. My father-in-law is in the law enforcement and has been for about 30 years and have had some interesting conversations, important conversations with him about the stresses that go into it and the training that goes into it and what happens when things go wrong. But I think that everybody can fall on the same page of senseless or irresponsible moments of killing people that are, of course, in the crosshairs for something that does not deserve anything close to that type of punishment needs to be eradicated. And that's a message that I think can't be lost here. And amongst all of this fury and all of these riots and all of these protests and a lot of the peaceful protests and moments that you have seen on social media that actually people have come together and understanding and conversation and listening, I do believe that is what I hope is the core that is carried forward, and that there is a greater good here for a long term. And that is that, unfortunately, in this country, for a series of reasons, we have staked out our part of the territory, looked across at those that are staking out a different part of the territory and said, you're not like me, I disagree with you, you are wrong, you are an idiot, I don't like you, you're the enemy. It's been a lot of division for a long time, and it has been heightened at this point. And so there is not a lot of common ground. There's not a lot of middle ground, and there is not a lot of priority placed on conceding any ground. There is not a priority placed on that. There's a priority placed on, I'm right, you're wrong, you're never going to be right, I don't want to really hear your side, I don't care about your side, I go to my side, I go to my TV channel, I go to my social media feed, I go to the people that I know agree with my stances, and that's all I'm interested in. And the other side does the same exact thing, and that happens with race. That happens with gender. It happens with all types of places in American culture where we have now fractured and said, this is who I am. I'm only going to surround myself with the like-minded voices, and that's who you are, and we shall never meet in the middle. And it has led to this, and it has to break, and it has to break open, and people have to recognize that the other side is not completely wrong and completely demonized, and that the priority here is actually compassion. The priority here is actually listening to the other side. The priority here has to be understanding, or at least trying to. A lot of people just don't want to do that because they're angry. They've been told not to do that. They're following some type of path they think is the right one that has led them here. So the message this week, this weekend, amongst all of the violence and rioting and protesting and peaceful protests and dissent and people that are really unhappy right now, is to listen. It is to hear. It is to think. It is to ask. And athletes jumped involved with that this weekend. There's a lot of athletes that spoke out on social media. There was also a lot of athletes that were involved in some of the protests and some of the gatherings. And Jaylen Brown was maybe the most notable. He's one of the best young players in the league for the Boston Celtics, and his story is a really compelling one. He drove 15 hours from Boston all the way to Atlanta and said, "This is where I'm from. I'm from Atlanta. I need to be part of this." And amazingly, Jaylen Brown, at 23 years old, is a vice president in the union already. Now, that's a pretty hefty leadership position to have at 23 years old. But I saw not only athletes driving 15 hours, I saw athletes on social media that were maybe speaking up that we have not seen speak up before, or in the same tone that we have seen before. You know, Joe Burrow had a pretty powerful message. We had Nick Saban issue a statement. We had people all across sports that were white or black, people of color or not, who were mobilized or who were invested enough to want to say something. And so I wonder if this week, if athletes changed, or if this was just kind of a moment in time, a weekend where you felt compelled to have to say something, maybe compelled to have to state your case, felt compelled to pick a side, if you will, and that will just kind of evaporate into the air. It is where we begin your cold open.
Being a celebrity, being an NBA player, don't exclude me from no conversation at all. First and foremost, I'm a black man, and I'm a member of this community, and I grew up on this soil, so I want to say that first and foremost, but raising awareness, some of the injustice that we've been seeing is not okay. And as a young person, you gotta listen to our perspective. Our voices need to be heard.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
So that was Jaylen Brown, and I think for some athletes, this will provide just a temporary place where they felt like they had to say something. And, you know, that's good and bad. I think that's good and bad for society in general. When something happens that you're watching on TV or you're watching scroll across your phone, and you feel like, well, I should say something because everybody's saying something, even though you don't really have anything good to say, nothing all that insightful, nothing all that compelling. I don't think necessarily that's always of that great value, the way that some people do, you know. But that is going to be what some people's tact is, and so that involves athletes as well. Some athletes will just say something, anything, to kind of plant their flag and say, I'm on this side, or I'm on that side, or what have you. But I think by and large, this is an important moment for athletes, because athletes do have such a powerful place in our culture. They hold such a place of influence, and social media allows them to not have to go the traditional routes to have a voice. They have a voice directly. Not always good to have that at their disposal, clearly, but they do have that. And I think for athletes right now in this moment, they're not playing. They're not consumed by their jobs. They're not practicing. They're not in film rooms. They're not in meetings. They're not playing in games. They're forced to have to just sit there and think about what is going on and digest what is going on and ask themselves, what am I going to do? I think we're all asking ourselves that. And because this is a pandemic, because this is a moment of kind of stillness in the world right now to varying degrees, you do not have your life distracting you away. You're sitting there and asking yourself, okay, well, how do I feel about this? And I think athletes are doing that right now as well. And what I hope ends up happening is that there are athletes here that, because they have space away from the game, are going to use that platform, that notoriety, that celebrity, to really become leaders in the community. I think that's a really valuable thing. I think we lack that a lot of times. I think we've lacked strong backbones in communities where people look up to and really trust and say, wow, that person's invested. That person has the best interests of our community, instead of distrust that happens in politics all the time. Not many people trust many people in politics. And I think it would be really great if this is the seed that starts growing plants where athletes with their voices say, you know what? I'm invested in this. I want to be invested in this. I have a voice. I can be part of things, whether it's this cause or other causes. I can be part of something. And I want to be. I want to be more than just an athlete, more than just somebody that gets paid to play basketball, play football, play baseball, hockey, soccer, etc. You know, it's interesting. Michael Jordan over the weekend had some strong words about what he saw. And Michael Jordan was never a guy that ever had an opinion ever on anything socially, culturally, anything about humanity at large. Not when he was playing. He was too consumed in the brand and consumed with making as much money as possible and not upsetting either side of the line. And for Michael to speak out now, it kind of shows that there's a new era upon us where athletes do feel empowered to do that. And I hope that they do that and do that not just to do it in words, but to do it in actions. And I hope it encourages us all for action, not just words, not just to watch and be bystanders, but to be part of the solution, not the problem. Be the change you wish to see in the world. And I hope that this is the start of some athletes doing that. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. Last night, we had some dueling documentaries. We had one on NBA TV about the early 90s Portland Trailblazers, one about Lance Armstrong finishing up the Lance documentary on ESPN. Didn't really go against one another, but they happened over the course of 3 hours. I got to watch all of it last night, so I want to start with the Blazers documentary, Rip City Revival. Did the documentary rewind and remind us of how the Blazers may have been underappreciated of that era? That's next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
All right, DA.
Hey, DA.
Jamming hard on it, DA. I don't know if you'll go bonkers or crazy, DA.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's an Ask the Pros Day where you get to pick a question, any question, ask a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tweet at me, DA on CBS, and be listening later on to the show when we'll answer that question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Funky beats from Pete the Body Bilotti on the ones and twos this morning here on the show. And as always, listen to the podcast. Anything that you may have missed or want to hear again, you can do so by simply going to our website, cbssportsradio.com, or pick your favorite podcast platform, whatever you use to get your podcast, radio.com, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, and find the DA Show podcast there. Last night on NBA TV was a documentary on the early 90s Portland Trailblazers. You're going, well, what's so special about them? Well, it's because that Blazers team, I think people may have forgotten, they went to two NBA finals in 3 years and were in the Western Conference Finals all three of those years. Now, because they never won the championship, history forgets them. But they went up against the Bad Boy Pistons in 1990. That was the second of back-to-back finals from the Pistons. And that was the Pistons' third consecutive year of the NBA Finals. So the Pistons had lost year one to the Lakers, had beaten the Lakers in year two, and then beat the Blazers in year three. So the Blazers kind of splash upon the scene, get to the finals in 1990, but lose to the Bad Boys. In 1991, they win 60 games. They actually have the best record of the Western Conference, but they end up losing to the Los Angeles Lakers. That was the last vestiges of Showtime. Magic and Worthy still on that team, but no longer coached by Pat Riley, no Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's the Lakers team that loses to Jordan in the NBA Finals. And that was Jordan's first championship and Magic's final NBA Finals appearance. And then in the third year of this little window here, the Portland Trail Blazers get back to the NBA Finals. They have the best record in basketball. They have a better record than the Chicago Bulls in 1992, and it appears to be their year. But that is the series where Michael goes off. He hits all of those three-pointers. He shrugs his shoulders. And the Bulls actually, in a 2-2 series, have to get game five on the road in Portland, only to come back, I believe, and clinch at home in game number six, if I remember correctly. So a really fascinating series, actually. And that era of the Blazers was really, really, really compelling because they had one of the 50 greatest players of all time in Clyde Drexler at his peak. And they had an amazingly deep team. When you look at that squad, you know, they noted in the documentary that it was Drexler and Terry Porter as their starting backcourt, but their depth included Danny Ainge, yes, that Danny Ainge, and Drazen Petrovic coming off the bench. That was a backcourt of Drexler, Porter, Ainge, and Petrovic. They had Buck Williams and Jerome Kersey and Kevin Duckworth. They had some great players of that era and that time and went to two NBA finals at a time when the West was stacked. I mean, you had a really good Sonics team and a really good Jazz team and a really good Spurs team and a really good Rockets team and the 90s, a really good Jazz team, a really good Lakers team. The Western Conference playoffs were brutal. And, you know, it's an era of Blazers basketball that they've never been that good since. They've never had a 3-year, 4-year window like that. And I think it's notable to go back and remind, you know, people of how good a team could be even if they didn't win a championship. I thought that the documentary last night, Rip City Revival, could have been a lot better. It was really very based on just the games. And I think the interstories within seasons, within the team, that's what made The Last Dance so compelling, is that it wasn't just the games. It was all the stories around the games. It was the stories of Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause and Phil Jackson, and the story of Dennis Rodman, the story of Scottie Pippen's fight with the front office, the story of Michael Jordan getting shut down early in his career because of the foot injury and leading to all types of resentment. It's the story of interweavings of personal vendettas or motivations or things of that nature, relationships. And that's really what the great documentaries for sports do. It's not just the games. This is very superficial, really just on the surface. And so I wish it would have delved in deeper to some of the other stuff. You only have an hour to work with. The Last Dance had 10. So that's a little bit of a different thing. But it is a reminder that those Blazers teams were fantastic. And, you know, the history books are written by the winners, and because they never got a championship, they won't ever get that chunk of history. But, you know, you think about it, they lost to two of the greatest teams ever, the Bad Boy Pistons and the Chicago Bulls. Not bad company. Not bad company at all. And it's a great team. It's a fun team in Portland. And I know that we're on in Portland, had this love affair with the Blazers that dates back to really Bill Walton in the 70s. And they had their revival there. That's why it's called Rip City Revival. And it's like a college town when you have the Blazers being good, because that's the only game in town. That's the only professional team in town for so many years before the Portland Timbers came around to the MLS as professional soccer, not lower level soccer. So pretty cool reminder that those Blazers teams, even without having an NBA Finals championship, really interesting, really good teams, really, really fun teams to watch. And Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls ruined a lot of legacies that way, you know. They stood in front of Drexler and the Blazers. They stood in front of Barkley and the Suns. They stood in front of Kemp and Payton and the Sonics. They stood in front of Stockton and Malone and the Jazz. All of those teams could have their own moment of history in their banner, but ran into one of the greatest dynasties and greatest player ever. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. Brad Heller is standing by, the dessert coordinator. He has our headlines this morning. Heller, good morning.
Good morning, DA. We've got a counterproposal from the Major League Baseball Players Association. Came out yesterday, a 114-game season from June 30th to October 31st. This is up from the 82 games the owners are asking for. Players want their prorated salaries and no additional pay cuts as expected, but up to $100 million in deferred salaries if the postseason is canceled because of a second wave from the coronavirus. An opt-out for all players to sit out the season because of virus concerns. Those considered high risk or living with somebody high risk would get paid, and no pay for those that sit out who are not high risk. We don't know when the owners will respond to this counterproposal, but they're not expected to go for more games because they'd lose more money in empty stadiums, especially without slashing players' salaries. And DA, you talked to New York Newsday columnist David Lennon on your show yesterday. And here's David Lennon.
There's just a lot of mistrust there. They have a lot of different revenue streams. There's so many different ways for teams to make money now. And the players who believe they're deserving of a lot, maybe more of that pie, you know, are skeptical about how much money these owners are definitely making.
And today, June 1st, had been considered a soft deadline for the two sides to reach an agreement for the season to start July 4th weekend. So they'd really have to get their act together to get things going by June 30th, which is the union's counterproposal. TMZ Sports obtained video of former NBA guard J.R. Smith beating up a man who allegedly damaged his truck during the protests in L.A. over the death of George Floyd. Smith is seen kicking and punching him before the man, who was white, runs away. J.R. justified the beating on his social media account and said it was not a hate crime. Michael Jordan released a statement yesterday. He said he's deeply saddened, truly pained, and plain angry over Floyd's death. Jordan says he stands with those that are calling out the ingrained racism and violence towards people of color, and he asks for peaceful expressions against injustice and demands accountability. Now, there was a peaceful protest in Atlanta over the weekend involving Pacers guard Malcolm Brogdon.
We don't have to burn down our homes. We don't have to. We built this city. This is the most proudly black city in the world.
Tell us the world, man.
So, like, let's take some pride in that. Let's focus our energy. Let's enjoy this together. This is a moment. We have leverage right now. We have a moment in time. People are going to look back. Our kids are going to look back at this and say, you were a part of that.
That's Malcolm Brogdon. The protest in Atlanta was led by Celtics guard Jaylen Brown, who made the 15-hour drive from Boston to his home state of Georgia. Deion Sanders posted a video of a workout with Antonio Brown over the weekend. Deion writing, I love him to life, and I can't wait to witness this comeback story called A, B, and C. C-S-E-E. The NHL will test players every day if and when the season resumes. That from Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. The cost of these tests will be more than $3 million because the league estimates it will need between 25 and 35,000 tests to get through the Stanley Cup playoffs. And NASCAR's fifth Cup Series race in 15 days. Yesterday at the Bristol Motor Speedway, Brad Keselowski winning it after Chase Elliott and Joey Logano crashed in front of him with a lap to go. DA.
Thank you, Brad. Okay, so this is interesting, Mraz. You have the counterproposal by the players' union, and they want to play 114 games. The reason is, of course, more games played, more money they make, especially right. If they just go down the prorated portion
of things.
All right,
Pete, talk to you an hour.
So, Pete, we got Heller's potted down here?
My bad.
Okay. Just want to make sure. So with 114 games versus 82 games or 80 games, the players get a bigger chunk of their salary. But here's the thing. Do we believe that the owners lose money with more games in a season? Which to me seems really counterintuitive considering we're talking about television money. So wouldn't you assume that local television for regular season games or national broadcast for ESPN, TBS, what have you, would have a bigger check coming toward the owners with more games played, that 114 is better than 82 for the owners?
So, again, I've never pretended to be some kind of math major, but basic economics would tell me more games, more TV inventory, more advertising, more money in their pocket through the TV revenue deals. At this point, you can't tell me that, you know, 82 games is the same amount of money as 114. I find that very hard to believe. And look, I mean, we've been sort of anti-player at times on this. if these guys are going out there and they're willing to play more games at this point, and if that means extending their season, although you could argue would our interest be less in November or whatever that would be, or if that involves playing more doubleheaders, I don't know as an owner how you don't look at that and say, okay, well, we're going to have more TV product and they're looking to work more. I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't buy what the owners are selling here.
Well, if it's true that the owners would prefer 82 games instead of 114 because they actually are losing money on this deal, on every game played, they lose money, then that really does give a lot of credence to the owner's argument here that they can't afford to pay the players, because it's always felt a little bit like hocus pocus that, well, you can't afford to pay the players. You're billionaires. But this is the thing. Don't cut me off here. This is the thing. Right. Is that the owners, are they doing this because they're actually losing money per game, or they want it to sound like they're losing money per game to get the economics of baseball changed? That's the big meatball here, is that the players believe the owners are trying to lay the foundation for the different economics in baseball moving forward. And so if that's the case, they're using this as an excuse. I have a hard time believing that every game played is a revenue loss for the owners. So as you just said, I would think 114 is better than 82. If we trust them here, though, and it is a revenue loss, then that's kind of an amazing, weird dynamic here financially, where the owners would say, this is the number that gives us a valid regular season, but we want no more than that number because we're actually losing money on the game. I don't know if I believe that.
I agree. So I guess my next question would be, what exactly is costing them the money that they're not making back at TV? Is it simply the players' salaries per game? Is it literally turning the lights and electricity on in the stadiums? Is it the hotels and all that comes with the road trips that are seemingly going to be shorter here? Like, what is the pot that's adding up to this lost revenue by playing more games that isn't made up for, in what baseball's biggest thing they make up for is their local TV money?
It must be the salaries. This must be their argument. Is that if we're going to pay you your prorated salaries and we have a lot less revenue coming in, then it's a loss for us. If we're losing 40% of our revenue every single game because we don't have people in the stands, we don't have parking, we don't have people buying hot dogs and beer, we don't have people buying tickets and luxury suites. If we don't have 40% of our revenue, if we're paying you your full salary out of 60% of the revenue, it's actually a loss for us. So I guess that's where they're coming from here. I don't know if I believe it, because you would think that the television deals are worth enough so that you could actually be making some money here. But I don't know. That's an interesting idea, that the owners would prefer a shorter season because they're actually at a loss, which would give credibility to their side.
Right.
That they can't afford to do this unless the players take another pay cut.
Unbelievable. All I know is this. I think they are, and I don't know if you're getting the sense, they are understanding, at least with counter proposals, at least the players aren't just stiff-arming this operation saying we're going to walk away from the table. These sides need to get something done this week. And if they don't have, if we're sitting here Friday morning and we're not on the verge of something done, this is going to be a monumental loss week for baseball.
Right, exactly. And we talked about this yesterday on the Sunday show, because that's when we had David Lennon on, the columnist from Newsday, and he was talking about the timeline of this, that they all said before, you know, 2 weeks ago, well, you got to get something done by late June because you got to have spring training by late June. That's, you can't have a season start anything later than early July. He said they've kind of moved the goalpost on that now because it just doesn't seem realistic to be able to get an agreement done by, in a time frame, by a date where you could actually start spring training in mid-June. I mean, What would you feel if they end up coming to an agreement this week? It would kind of feel like the last 2 weeks were just a big song and dance. If suddenly players came back with a proposal today or yesterday, owners got a secondary proposal to them by tomorrow, that they wash this thing out by Thursday or Friday, would be like, well, where the hell was all this movement and conversation the last 14 days?
It would be, but I bet you a fan don't care. The fan is only going to care if we get to July and this has still gone on and the season got pushed back. The last 2 weeks have been brutal hits for Major League Baseball, and it's turned people off. But ultimately, if the goal of accomplishing getting this season off and running by the beginning of July happens, you're going to forget pretty quickly what's gone on the last 2 weeks, and you'll be all in and thankful that baseball is there at the beginning of July. That is only really going to become a big hurt if we get there and that fight is extended to then. Also, just a very, very, very detour side note on that point, DA. I have yet to see some sort of potential template of a schedule released if this got out in the beginning of July, which means if you could take 2 weeks to throw together some Major League Baseball schedule, again, why are normal seasons are we putting schedules out in July or August the year before?
Yeah. Yeah, Major League Baseball loves to get that schedule out the August before the season starts in April, and now they would whip that thing together in about 3 days. Here's my other question about this. 114 games for the players. What's the timeline on that? I'm going to look this thing up. When do they want to start baseball and get 114 in? And how many double headers are they doing? Right. How many days off? Because to squeeze 114 into this timeline, it's already June 1st. Where are they finding 114 games right now if they've got no labor agreement?
It's another 28 games or so. So in theory, it's another month of baseball without doubleheaders, which would mean you push it towards the end of November. But
it's another 38 games from 80.
Is it 30? Okay, so it's another 38 games. So
or 114 will be 34.
Okay, so that's at least a month, no days off, but then you throw in doubleheaders. I almost feel like they'd push it maybe another 2 weeks into November and probably have to play two doubleheaders a week most weeks. It's a lot of baseball.
Yeah, to get 114 in starting July 1st, I mean, because if you think about it, just from a regular MLB schedule, July 4th is basically mid-season is the last weekend in June. So by July 4th, you're at about maybe 78 to 80 games left in your season. So at that date, the players want to get 114 in? How does that happen? How could it happen? 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. When we return, this date in mothership history. It's an old song here on the DA show. Mraz defending against what he thinks is fat shaming. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Sports talk was meant to be on an imaginary spaceship.
It's almost died, DA. I can see it up in the air. The mothership's above east the coast of Florida. Beam me up, my man.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Doing more, sponsored by the Home Depot. Everything that you need to do projects smarter, faster, easier. The Home Depot here to help, and they've got many ways to do that. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. How about the NBA? Laying the groundwork for a return to action with a reported target date of July the 31st at Disney in Orlando. A season format that would likely be determined by this Thursday. Reports state 20 to 22 teams will be invited to the restart to compete for the playoff structure, the playoff spots. Also, our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. The last year full policy term, visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. When I see the write-up for this date in mothership history, I have to laugh because it reminds me of the drop that we have from Zach Gelb, who says, fat shame Mraz.
Maybe he'll fat shame Mraz.
It's a very aggressive drop from Zach. He's really spitting it at you. Fat shame Mraz.
Maybe he'll fat shame Mraz.
And when I read the write-up from Connor Green today, it says, this date in mothership history, June the 1st, 2015, Mraz defends against fat shaming. Now, this
fat
happened
shame, Mraz.
5 years ago, but I feel like it could have happened yesterday, could have happened on Friday, could have happened last Friday. Could have happened last year on a Friday, 2 years ago on a Tuesday, 3 years ago on a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It feels like we do this quite a bit. So it's time for this date in mothership history.
Come one, come all, step step inside. It's This Date in Mothership History.
On June the 1st, 2015, Mraz defended against, you guessed it, fat shaming.
Fat shame, Mraz.
There is an ad campaign for Protein World that has the picture, a picture of a chick in a bikini. Okay, she's got ripped abs or whatever. She looks great. The billboard, this was in London, it says, are you beach body ready? The summer is here. Or is your body in beach body shape? Now, look, I might be thin, but would I like to be more jacked? Of course. Would I like to look better in a swimsuit? Of course. But I'm still going to go out to the beach, and I'm still going to take off my shirt, and I'm going to be fine. Sure. You live to see another day. It's okay.
I mean, you could tighten up those biceps a little bit. But
look, as I said, I could be in the gym every single day working out, but not my bit.
There's no such thing as beach body. There is body, and everybody is allowed to have whatever body they want and show up on the beach and flaunt their stuff.
This isn't saying you're not allowed to. This is just saying, are you beach body ready?
It's not saying you're not allowed to, but it's making you feel uncomfortable. Like, if you pass that sign, you go, a couple of those shakes ain't going to help me get to, like, apparently what's acceptable on the beach. And now I can't show up in my Scooby-Doos and sit out there on the beach and have a good time. Everybody's allowed to be who they want to be.
You can look chubbo. What do I care? Look however you want.
But I don't need billboards telling me I should look like that to be accepted on the beach. That's exactly what it's saying. God.
Well, so I have to feel shame? I just think that you realize what's attainable, what's unattainable, and you're insecure about apparently not being healthy.
There you go with the H word again.
If I can't use the F word, how I can't use the H word? It's just like, so no one's allowed to ever describe anything of health. Like, we just can't go there because it'll make somebody feel bad.
No, you could say you want to be healthy, but how about then put a picture of, me up there kind of like eating. Something like that. You're putting
up. The billboard should be you.
Well, then everybody looks up and goes, well, I don't want to look like that, so maybe I should. But when you see somebody look like that, it's almost like you're putting up somebody that's unattainable to get. Okay. And then you're making it feel like, well, wait, I can't. I'm hot over the summer. I'm sweating because I'm overweight. Now I can't get to the beach because I'm going to feel uncomfortable because I'm going to look like that.
You can't look at healthy people and not feel shame? How is that the?
No, you can. You see enough healthy people walk in the street and feel shame. I don't need to see healthy people telling me I'm a disaster.
Well, don't feel shame then.
I can't help how my intestines feel. I look up, I feel shame. I'm shameful. Look at me. I got C cups. I'm a man.
Now, during quarantine, have the C cups gone to D cups?
They're not D cups, but they're flopping all over the place. I got in a bathing suit in my pool, and I'm a wreck. I am a true wreck. I am nowhere near where I was last summer. I'm very sloppy. I'm very floppy.
You're up 14 from start of quarantine?
Up 11. I lost 3 last week. It's really, you got to okay. See. I'm basically having press conferences with my wife, dog, and baby with a curve up there telling you where we're at. And the weight gain began to flatten a little bit here. We had our biggest decrease in pounds to date through the quarantine after a big spike in cases. So we believe that we've plateaued a little bit here on the weight loss, weight gain. And there's not an Entenmann's donut to be found right now as I've thrown out some junk food.
What is the toughest part about looking at yourself in the mirror right now?
I think it's a combination. I'm just so pasty white while being floppy that at least if I was tan and my moobs were just drooping, at least it would look a little better. It's just like, if they came out a fat version of the movie Powder, and that's me right now. It's just, I look gross. Like,
so you look belly, like an, you look like an Entenmann's powdered donut.
I do. And then like, if I look, my belly button looks like you're staring into like where that reverse galaxy is that they reported about in the news. It's just a deep hole that doesn't end because of where I'm at. So it's gross. I'm pasty and sloppy.
So that's where SpaceX actually went, right into your belly button.
Right into my belly button. I can't find how deep this goes. It's not a spoon long enough.
I like how the F word's not allowed around here, nor the H word, healthy. You're not allowed to say health or healthy.
Healthy sounded harsh there.
When we come back here on the show, could mic'd up football players be better than pumped in crowd noise this fall? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.